Hello, this is Robbie Dunn. I'm coming to you live from sunny Spain, and you're listening to Barca Talk.
Today on Barca Talk, Ousmane Dembélé has been fined by FC Barcelona and sort of publicly shamed for issues surrounding his hamstring injury. Barcelona B won their first match in the Segunda B division, and FC B Femení are the champions of the Catalan Cup for the sixth consecutive year. The men's team put some points on the table in La Liga, defeating Real Betis 5-2. Now here's some news for you. Juan Miranda, the Barcelona B left back, is on the verge of moving to the Bundesliga on a loan to Schalke 04. Miranda was believed to be a suitable backup to Jordi Alba last season, but a couple of poor showings in last year's Copa del Rey have kept him off the first team since then. Still a youngster, Miranda started every game in the under-19 European Championship for Spain, which Spain won. The terms of this loan deal to Schalke are still to be finalized, but German newspaper Bild has reported that he will sign a two-year loan with no option to transfer him outright, but the loan could be extended. Talks with Valencia CF to transfer Rafinha have stalled, and Portuguese newspaper O Jogo claims to have sources confirming that Rafinha is about to move to Turkish side Fenerbahce. This season being the last year of his current contract with Barcelona, the Brazilian is looking for other opportunities to play. According to TransferMarket.com, his market value was at its highest when he was on loan to Inter Milan. Despite performing well in preseason friendlies and in Barcelona's league opener against Athletic Club, the most opportunities for him to see time on the pitch will almost certainly be at another club. Arturo Vidal could be on the move away from the Camp Nou as well. Italian club Inter Milan made an offer to take the Chilean on loan, but Barcelona rejected the offer, instead looking for a complete transfer that would get Vidal off the club's books and recoup some of the transfer costs they paid for him last year. According to Mundo Deportivo, Barcelona are most concerned with building enough liquidity to bring Neymar back, and loaning out Vidal would not contribute to that project. Catalunya Radio reported on the program Tot Costa that Eric Abidal met with Ousmane Dembélé and his representatives in a meeting that took over an hour, where voices were raised and Abidal told Dembélé to change his attitude if he wanted to stay at the club. This came after the young winger did not report for a medical exam after last week's match against Athletic Club, as he was instructed to do. Not only has the player been scolded, but he has also been fined by the club. More on that, plus the Guard of Honor, brief updates on FCB Femini and Barca B, and a full match review of the Real Betis match. Hey everybody, welcome to Barca Talk. I'm Brian Henderson in Buffalo, New York. Joining me as always is Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. How's my second favorite doctor doing?
Not well. I'm not well. I could use a doctor. I could use a website doctor who works for free. I could use a pro bono website doctor. I've been trying to. So I'm officially in business now as a offering podcast production services. Because as you know, I'm the producer of this podcast. I design the structure of the show. I do a lot of the work for planning the episodes, and then of course I do all of the audio business for each episode. So now I've started a business called Sound It Media, you know, where I'm offering these services, these skills that I have in exchange for money. And you know, it sounds like a really good arrangement. I've been trying to build my company website, and we just spent the better part of a half hour before I pressed record today with you essentially trying to talk me off a ledge. We're like, I've been so frustrated with trying to build a website for this company that I'm just not good at it. But you were successful. I think you successfully talked me down, so I'm feeling a little bit better. But I don't know, man. It's just that moment when someone asks you, "How you doing?" And for me, I'm always that. I'm that person who, even though I'll say, "Oh, doing fine, doing great," what I'm thinking is, yeah, you don't really want to know. You're not even ready for me to unload onto you how I'm actually doing right now, even though I'm actually fine.
I mean, again, it goes back to, you know, who the person is asking you.
Yeah.
Right. If it's just someone that you don't really care about, then you usually just answer fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we talked about since we've been recording this podcast, I can always tell the cues that you give me. So,
I mean, I don't want to burst your bubble here, but everybody can tell because I am someone who telegraphs with his face exactly how he's doing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. I know.
I'm very expressive.
But hopefully, you know, But hopefully, after our little seminar talk, put you in a little bit better mood so we can talk about Barca a little bit. So
yeah, yeah. But before we talk about Barca, tell me about how your vacation is going, because you're still in France, right?
I'm still in France, the land of cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend was telling me that there's more than 300 types of cheese here in France, which is obviously amazing. And yeah, it's going well. I'm going to Paris on Tuesday, and then I fly back to San Francisco for 10 days. I'm really looking forward to see my family and obviously the Pacific Ocean. So that'll definitely be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to those events coming up.
Do you surf?
No, I used to just boogie board. Nice. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In France, like cheese is like a whole course in a meal.
Correct. It's right before dessert.
Yeah. So you have your whole meal and now some cheeses.
Exactly.
Then a pastry or something.
Correct. That is correct. Yeah.
It's unreal. Can you imagine that in America? It would just be like Velveeta singles. Not a delicacy at all.
Not a delicacy. No.
Well, speaking of French things. Mm-hmm. We have a discussion segment today. We're going to talk about a young Frenchman by the name of Ousmane Dembélé and another Frenchman by the name of Eric Abidal. Abidal's French, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Dembélé, I talked about this at the news segment up top. He's been fined for violating the club's disciplinary code. After the match last week with Athletic Club, he was instructed to report to the club medical offices for a scan of his leg the next day. He did not show up. He went traveling. Valverde had given the entire team, 2 days off, which is something that we have discussed as like maybe not the best idea. But in any case, Valverde gave everyone the weekend off after that Athletic match. But Dembélé was instructed to report for this medical exam, this scan, and he ignored a direct instruction. So he's been fined by the club. And this has happened before. Last year he missed training. He was late. He almost certainly got fined for that. But it was never in the press. It was never public. And I don't know how the word got out about this particular instance. It was initially reported on Catalunya Radio on this Tot Costa program. I don't know how they got that information, but then it was picked up by a number of print publications. So you can see reports of this on Sport, AS, Mundo Deportivo. But no one cites a source, really. So I don't know how anyone got this information. So it's a little sketchy on those details. But like The Sun, for example, estimated that the fine is somewhere in the several hundred thousands of pounds. They had a range of 330 to 900,000 pounds, which is a pretty big range. And it kind of makes me think they're just making it up. But so we know that clubs find their own players as a way to enforce discipline, manage their behavior. So we could have assumed that Dembélé was probably fined for this. And, letting that go public, however, seems like a way of shaming him on top of charging the fine. To me, that's how it strikes me. So good idea, bad idea, letting this get out into the public?
Well, personally, I think it's a bad idea. I mean, usually disciplining a player should be behind closed doors. But I also think that Barcelona have tried to keep it out of public before, but they're kind of reaching at a point of no return right now. And they're trying to put pressure on Dembélé through the press. Now, we talked about this through the Patreon episode about how, for whatever reason, the press is really after Dembélé lately, especially when he arrived to the club, just of everything he does. And like I said, I think that FCB are hitting a point of no return. They know he's super talented. But again, Brian, how much longer can they wait for him to mature?
Right. I mean, he's 22 now. And if you think about what you were doing when you were 22... But then again, no one was paying me an awful lot of money to do anything when I was 22.
The thing is, the big point is, last year and the year before, we were saying, oh, he's new to the club, so it's okay. He's getting used to the culture, so forth. But now it's already, year three in Barcelona, and, he has a huge French contingent there. So again, the communication should be strong within the team, and especially with Abidal being in the board. Now, to me, one of my main things is, he costs more than 100 million euros in fees, and he has to be able to be productive and playing at more than 75% of the season, especially at that price. So for me, he's got to really turn around this year, because I could really see at the end of the season that Barcelona put him up for sale for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think there are already rumors that he was potentially part of a Neymar deal, but then he wasn't. And now it seems like he might be again. And it just seems like the club is trying to some degree, manage his to either try and pressure him to be better, but also maybe to show that they're not married to keeping him. You know, like, we will let him go, you know, or we will let you go and we'll tell the world.
Sure. And I think the other thing too is that people just get frustrated because we all have, you know, especially if we play football, dreams of playing professionally. And even for FC Barcelona, and to see, like, for me, Dembele missing training because he overslept playing video games, to me just infuriates me.
Oh, yeah. You
know? Because for me, I loved training. I loved it so much. I loved working out there. I loved passing the ball, kicking, doing all the drills and so forth. I just can't fathom that he would even miss practice, you know, especially getting paid all this money. So I think that's why a lot of people get frustrated, is because of the reason for him, you know. On top of that, it's the very minor things that he has to do. It's just like, eat better, rest more, pay attention to your body. They're really kind of minor things that'll go a long way for his career. But again, you know, if he continues his path, he's just going to be another, you know, superstar player that had a flash in La Liga, like Danielson, Javier Saviola, and also Adriano, who was a Brazilian that didn't play La Liga, but, you know, they had two seasons of greatness. And because, for whatever reason, injury or coaching confidence, they were out of professional football very quickly.
We don't want to see that happen to him. Ideally, we want to see him fit, acting really professionally, behaving really professionally, essentially working towards becoming a leader on the team. And we also want to see him be productive. We want to see him making assists, scoring goals, and all that sort of thing. That's ideally what I would want, not just because of how much we paid for him, though that's part of it, but it's mainly that he's clearly a talent. So I just would really like to see him step up the professionalism so that his talent can be realized and he can do good things for the club.
For sure. I mean, every time he steps on the field, I get excited, you get excited about the runs that he potentially can do, the pace that he has, the ability to use left and right. Again, you know, I want him to succeed, you know, and especially obviously with the price, but just, we need someone to take over for Messi when he eventually goes down in form, you know? And right now we don't really have someone in the back, you know, coming up forward as a youth player. I mean, the only one we really have is Dembele. And obviously Griezmann's going to be a good bridge to that. But long-term, we don't really have anyone that we're really excited about in the farm system. And so Dembele is kind of that hope. And just, again, like I said, he just has to make minor changes and he'll go a long way in his career. And he'll be fit to play most of the matches that are available at FC Barcelona.
Yeah, but we would really have to talk to someone who knows him really well to try and begin to understand why he doesn't make these small changes.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's all sorts of theories that it's his entourage, you know, his uncle and all these people that are around him that are kind of freeloading. That's what it's been presented by the press. And again, it's really interesting to see how the press have really gone after him. Again, to answer your question, it's interesting that Abidal went public because maybe they're just desperate now, you know, and they just need to put pressure on him any way possible.
Right. Well, as far as I can tell, Abidal did not go public. He didn't make a public statement. Mm. But it's one of those things where apparently someone who works in the press was just outside of the room where this meeting was taking place between Abidal and Dembele and his manager, Sissoko. And there was, they heard yelling, and it lasted over it. It was like an hour and a half meeting, and you could hear what Abidal was saying, and Abidal is like furious and he's yelling. Uh-huh. And so people overheard this. So it's not that anyone from the club, Abidal or anybody else, got in front of a podium or behind a podium and read a statement like this. It was one of those things. And that's why I mentioned that I'm not clear on what the source, you know, like how the person who reported this originally on Catalonia Radio, how they know this. But I assume that someone was just near the room. But if you're going to be in that room and you know that press is around, sure, it wasn't a public statement, but there's, you know, if you know who's on the other side of the door and you're yelling, Come on.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was deliberate necessarily, but it could be.
Yeah. Could have been. I mean, this reminds me of my parents' tactic.
Oh, what did they do?
You know, like they'd be in the kitchen, I'd be in the other room, and they'd be talking about me loud enough for me to hear, but they would pretend like they didn't know I was listening.
That sounds type of thing, like, you know? Some really great parenting.
Well, this seems like what Abidal did, you know. I think they may have kind of staged it that way, because why would you have these important discussions with media around?
Right.
You know, especially like next door. I can just imagine them with Kanye glasses against the wall, listening to the to the conversation that Abidal was having.
Yeah. And on this level, I can kind of get
amateur hour.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is amateur hour.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it could be kind of like a cunning political move, because with an organization like this, something like that, like where the actual press is involved and it's something that they're interested in and they're going to write about, and now we're going to talk about, there are some other implications.
But again, just like being, you know, something that you deserve, again, Dembele needs to really change his behavior, because again, we need his goals.
Yeah.
We need his performance. We need him on the field.
Yeah. Well, then there's the other issue, which is that against Athletic, no one looked especially great on our side. So I don't mean to single out Dembele, but where were those goals, buddy?
Yeah, yeah. We're recording this before the match, but it's going to be interesting to see the lineup that goes out tonight and the performance. I'm really kind of nervous about it. People on Twitter are talking about potential lineups and so forth. So again, with all our injuries, we just need to survive these next couple of weeks, because again, Brian, La Liga is going to be very difficult this season, because there's a lot of parity, as we'll talk about those upset losses that happened this week.
Yeah, no, absolutely, we will. The women's team played Espanyol in the Catalan Cup on Saturday, winning 4-0. This is the women's sixth consecutive title in that regional tournament. The match was played in Municipal Palamos Costa Brava in Palamos, just north of Barcelona. Oshawala and Claudia Pina each scored a goal, and Mariona scored two. We'll have a full report from Michelle Taylor in 2 weeks. And Barcelona B started their season in the Segunda B division against Badalona, and the season started off well. With two goals scored and shutting out Badalona on their home ground, the Municipal Camp of Montegala, Barça B chalked up their first win on match day one. The first goal was scored by Abel Ruiz in the 3rd minute, and the second came from Quique Saverio, an Ecuadorian winger who's come up through the ranks at Barcelona over the last 4 years. Max Bleuer will be on the show next week to run down that match. It's time now for the Barca Talk Guard of Honor to show our thanks for everyone who has chosen to support the podcast on Patreon. We have so many people to give the Guard of Honor to this week. Today, we're honoring everyone who joined our Patreon community over the summer who we haven't already thanked. Receive the Guard of Honor yourself by supporting the show on Patreon. You're already getting a lot of value out of this podcast with the Monday episode every week of the season, but for just $5 a month, you can get even more. You'll get another episode on Thursday every week, plus bonus episodes like the full audio yearbook series we just put out and the Legend series that we've also just started. Now is the perfect time to go follow the link to Patreon in our show notes and join the community to be honored in the segment. And now, we would like to thank Florian, Simon Steiner, Thomas Hirpa, Rick DeLeon, Kyle Kerr, Joe, Marju, Timu Tanwa, Nitish Ratan, Christoph, and Alejandro. Thank you everyone for your support. Now enjoy this pasillo. Now, one upside to playing the last match of the week is you know how everybody else did, and two major upsets on match day two were Celta beating Valencia and Valladolid drawing Real Madrid. So let's start with Celta Valencia. Valencia went to Vigo, and one real suave goal scored by Gabriel Fernandez with an assist from Denis Suarez was enough for Celta to win the 3 points out of the match. And this match also featured former Barcelona goalkeeper Jasper Cillessen in goal for Valencia, and of course Denis Suarez, another ex-Barca man playing for Celta, and I thought he looked really good. So, but that was a big upset. I mean, Celta's not bad, of course. We know that they're roughly mid-table, so they can get results. But you would have really been expecting more from Valencia in this match, and Celta got that goal, held off Valencia, and got a nice upset win.
For sure. A couple of things that stood out for me, obviously, was the Jasper Cillessen performance. Had some numerous saves when I was watching the highlights on this. And obviously the PK stop that he had on Denis Suarez. So we always knew Cillessen was a good backup goalkeeper for Barca, probably too good to be a backup. So I think he'll have a really excellent season for Valencia. The other thing too, for Celta, Brian, you know, playing there is a difficult place. I thought for sure the weekend before they would have a better performance against Real Madrid, especially how flimsy Real Madrid's defense is. But Real Madrid was able to beat them last weekend. But again, Denis Suarez, Brian, who knew that when you get more repetition, you know, you get more playing time, you actually play well, you know, who knew that?
Right. Well, you know, he had his loan spell at Arsenal, and I don't think he played a whole lot during that time. But, you know, I think he saw more minutes than he was seeing at Barcelona, you know, and it's just tricky, right? Because it's such a crowded squad, particularly in the midfield. So, of course, Denis Suarez didn't get too much opportunity. And I think that there were times when he was at Barcelona where he was just nervous or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't seem to be ebbing.
Yeah, that's a good word. I like that.
Yeah, whereas now at Celta, like, he looks great. He looks very comfortable. He looks free. I think he's, you know, it could be a management issue where maybe Valverde and him didn't quite click. And whereas now at Celta, he is given more agency. He's given more encouragement. Sure. Who knows? But he's looking really good for Celta, and I'm happy for him.
Yeah. I think it's two things. It's just going back home and knowing that you're going to be a starter.
Right.
He's a huge, Brian, a huge upgrade at that position for them. Because before, I don't remember who played last year, but they did not have the quality of Denis Suarez. And bringing him with Aspas over there, now all of a sudden that's a formidable duo when they play that three forward system. So to me, it's just those two things. Going back home and knowing that you're going to be a starter does huge things for your confidence. And you can just see, when I was watching the highlights, so many Denis Suarez on the ball highlights, him making passes, him cutting through. And like you said, he just looks free-flowing, playing with a lot of confidence, as though he's unrestricted at all costs.
Yeah, and him with Aspas, and now this new kid, the guy who scored the goal, Gabriel Fernandez. Yeah. Man, this guy looks fierce.
Yeah, and he has such a great first name too, you know.
It's okay.
Yeah, it was a nice goal for sure. It was a nice little ball from Suarez down on the ground to the center, and then Hernandez did kind of a back flick that beat Cillessen. So just an overall nice play. But again, playing up there, Brian, I told you, in the beginning of the season right now, because the weather is nice in Galicia, it's not a difficult place to play. However, come October through April, it's going to be difficult, even more difficult because of the rain, the heavy field and so forth. And it's just a tough place to play. So they're going to be a formidable opponent this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're going to see them finish higher in the table this year than they did last year, or at least they probably should, because they have definitely upgraded their squad, not just with Denis, but overall they're looking really good. Now, this was the fun one for me, the Real Madrid Valladolid result. I was watching the second half, and so I missed the first half. And honestly, Madrid did not have a whole lot going on. Apparently, they really owned the first half. They had 14 shots, even though only three were on target. But they were really dominant in the first half. But from what I saw in the second half, they did not look especially dominant, despite having the home field and quite a few million more euros in talent on the pitch than Valladolid, who finished La Liga in 16th place last year. But I knew Real Madrid would probably score at least once because, you know, with a club like that, with a team like that, even if they're having a hard time getting through against someone like Valladolid, you just know they're going to get one in. Sure enough, Karim Benzema scored a really nice one. Like, on a, you know, he gets the ball essentially with his back to goal, does a very nice turn and shoot, slots it in, keeps it low. It was a very nice goal, honestly. And that was in the 82nd minute. And so I figured they've sealed this up. But then in the 88th minute, Sergio Guardiola snuck one between Courtois' legs for an equalizer. And the through ball on that play, the assist, was perfect. It was really well-threaded pass. And I think it was partially, like, Guardiola had a good finish, but also I think Courtois made a goalkeeping error on that particular play. But then Valladolid equalizes. It was great.
For sure. And also, it was like 1 minute later.
Well, it was 6 minutes.
I mean, that's the thing. Was it 6 minutes? I thought it was sooner than that.
Anyway. I mean, it was short. It was short, but it was six whole minutes.
Yeah.
But in that game, it felt like one.
Gotcha. The thing that I crack up about this is that, you know, in the summertime, Real Madrid was talking about revolution, revolution this, we're going to bring Pogba, revolution this, and they still have the same midfield. Now, that midfield 3 years ago scares me. Now, I embrace it. And every time I love it, because it was a Toni Kroos fail, basically, that led to this counterattack goal. Modric, again, is not at the same level that he was last year, even last summer. And Casemiro, he's always a red card liability. So I love this midfield because they don't really have backups that are really pushing them. So Zidane is going to be using this midfield for the rest of the season. The other thing these two games, Brian, tell me is that this is going to be a very difficult La Liga season. More teams now, like especially Celta, Valencia, Valladolid, you're going to have more upsets in this season now. Now, that's good right now for us because since we are so injured stricken, we're still okay, you know, especially if we win or tie tonight or lose, if that happens as well. It's going to be a really difficult season because as you can see, anyone can win on any Sunday now. No teams are scared of the big boys, especially, you know, when we're talking about the top seven teams.
So this could be Atletico Madrid's year. I don't know.
Brian, honestly, you know, depending what happens after the end of this month with Barca, I mean, it could be a distinct possibility that you have more people vying for the top spot in La Liga. I mean, you know, you think about Celta, they're healthy. Depending on how they do this season depends on Aspas' injury,
sure,
right? How many games he plays. Sevilla, just, you know, how well they gel together on Lopetegui. Betis, you know, if they can actually play some defense. So each team has some things. Atletico, again, how many goals can they score? You know, you're never going to have to question their defense. And with Madrid, it's their defense. Their defense.
One, exactly. Atletico can score all the time. One per game. That's the play. But, you know, Sevilla is the only team. Already, it's match day two, and Sevilla is the only team so far with 6 points.
Yeah.
I mean, already that's.
Yeah, and that's huge.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's just. Yeah, I mean, that's huge, and it's just a matter of time before they drop points as well.
Exactly. Because they could just drop points against Getafe or something.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? You know, it goes down to the depth throughout the season, you know, with the competitions and so forth. But obviously, you want to start off right. And Sevilla is doing that. That's the best thing you can do is to win your matches. Now, Madrid lost a huge opportunity yesterday to get 6 points and be right there because. As we've seen the last couple of seasons in La Liga, they faltered at the beginning and were not able to catch up to Barca. So it's really huge tonight that Barca just gets at least 1 point tonight just to keep their head above water and just, you know, we're in the middle of the pack and we'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's talk about La Liga match day two against Real Betis at the Camp Nou with a 5-2 win as the result, leaving Barcelona in ninth place on the table with only 3 points at the moment. Atletico Madrid did also get 3 points against Leganés, so now it's just Sevilla and Atleti on 6 points after only match day two. So let me just run down some key stats, and I think these stats are actually pretty good, aside from the scoreline, which is also good, but possession was just about where you would hope for it to be when Barcelona's concerned. 70.4% possession for Barca, 29.7 for Betis. And the shot stat is pretty incredible. Barca had 20 shots, 7 on target, to Betis with only 4 shots, but 3 on target. So higher percentage of on target, but still pretty good. And then the passing accuracy, this is a good one. I like this. Barca's passing accuracy was at 91.1%. But let's talk about the lineup. Because with Messi, Suarez, and Dembele all injured, the only top choice forward available was Antoine Griezmann. Ansu Fati, 16-year-old winger from the under-19 side, started on the bench and actually got a few minutes. But Carles Perez and Rafinha, they were the ones with the start alongside Griezmann. The midfield, however, had one important change from last week. Instead of Carlos Alenia, Sergio Busquets started, but both Sergio Roberto and Frankie de Jong were in the 11 again, same as last week. So, Gabriel, would you have rather seen Arthur somewhere in the starting 11? And if so, who would you have replaced him with?
No, I mean, I think I'm pretty okay with the starting 11 tonight. You know, again, my doubts is always with the formation, but again, we have such a deep midfield this season. I wanted to see how this midfield was going to work out. And again, Brian, it took, you know, maybe about 35 minutes or so for them to figure it out. And once they did, we were able to get more teeth in the attack. But, you know, for me, you know, I would like to see Artur play, but it's not mandatory. And I don't think, you know, having De Jong and Busquets, you know, they finally were able to figure it out after minute 35 or so how to play with each other. And the goals came. So I was pretty okay with the starting 11 for tonight.
Yeah. And well, and speaking of the formation and the strategy, Barca was running pretty much a 4-3-3 with Rafinha and Carlos Perez on the wings, and Griezmann in a somewhat free role. He was a little bit all over the place, almost like Messi, but with his own, you know, French flair. Sergio Roberto, in particular, was the midfielder running into the central space when Griezmann was out wide. So overall, what did you think of the tactics?
With this starting 11, I would have liked to seen a 4-4-2. Just push Rafinha back a little bit, have Griezmann and Perez play together. But again, it just goes back to the 4-3-3 marriage that we have at Barcelona. And I think, you know, again, sometimes we just have to adapt our lineup with the tactics. You know, eventually we did get the goals. And I think that was more a part because of how well Busquets played from minute 40 to minute 60 or so, because he had such a huge impact in the game. But again, I would have liked to see Griezmann paired with Perez. I think that would have been really dangerous. And more importantly, it would have limited Betis on the counter.
Well, I felt like Perez was particularly effective out wide on the wing. So if it were a 4-4-2 and it was just him and Griezmann, I would think he would have spent more time kind of tucked in, and he wouldn't have been able to exploit his skills as a winger quite as much.
That is true. That is true. But how many shots did he have until he actually scored? So again, that's the thing. It's like, yes, he played really well as a winger and he had some opportunities. But for me, like, just to have him paired with Griezmann, just to go through the middle, you know, with this formation, I would have liked to seen that. But again, you can't have everything, right? Because like you said, if you put him in the 4-4-2, you lose his ability to be a winger, right? And so maybe that restricts him a little bit more. But I'm thinking more importantly about with Griezmann, because Griezmann is such a superstar and such a masterclass forward that I would rather have him paired up with someone so that you can get Griezmann off and get some more goals for him.
I'm just thinking that, like, even though it didn't, he only scored the one goal and he didn't have any assists otherwise, but those dribbles where he's out wide and he cuts in were especially good, even though they didn't necessarily produce anything. I thought they were good moments, and they did create chances, or at least close to chances. And if he were more tucked in, he wouldn't necessarily be able to cut in quite as much. That's what I was thinking, but I take your point. Now, I do want to touch on the substitutions, because the substitution choices were at times a little interesting. First substitution wasn't until the 73rd minute, and it was Arturo Vidal coming on for Busquets. Now, at that point, Barcelona was already up 4-1, so you might argue that it doesn't matter, but did you have a response to that sub?
I mean, it was funny because on the TV feed here, they were showing Vidal warming up before halftime, and I was flipping out, Brian, because at that moment we were still down 1-0, and I just couldn't fathom that Vidal was the answer, you know, the missing keystone for our attack. Now, again, Busquets had a bit of a knock there, you know, from basically minute 40 to minute 70 or so, Busquets was playing out like old Busquets, right? And it makes you kind of realize just last season how kind of run down he's been playing a little bit, because he had glimpses of masterclass and brilliance tonight, right? And I think we definitely needed that. Now, I was okay with the substitution because, you know, I think Vidal, you know, gives us that defensive presence, and we kind of needed that. And Busquets got a kind of a knock there, so to kind of preserve him. But again, this season is really important, Brian, for EV to preserve Busquets, because we still need to get these performances when we need them for Champions League, for example, and in April.
Yeah, but that makes me wonder about the timing of the substitution, because it seemed a little bit on the late side for me, because by minute 60, we've had goals from Griezmann, two from Griezmann, one from Carlos Perez, and one from Jordi Alba in the 60th minute. So, and if Vidal's already warm, why not do it a little bit sooner? And then you can preserve Busquets just that much more by 10 minutes or so.
For sure. And I, you know, if Busquets doesn't get that knock, because he got a pretty good knock on like around that time, I bet you he finishes the game. Mm. Yeah. So I think it was more seeing Busquets on the ground a little bit and then having Vidal ready because maybe prior to that, he puts in him for Sergio Roberto, because that's kind of what he would do more. He would take out Roberto first before Busquets.
Right, because then it would be just a one-for-one change. They're both playing essentially right midfield.
For sure, for sure.
Okay, then in the 78th minute, the 16-year-old Ansu Fati comes on for Perez, so a really great opportunity for the youngster. I had mixed feelings about this, because on one hand, it's really exciting to see such a young player come on for the first team and get his debut, and we're already winning, and it's clear that we're going to win the game, so I didn't feel any risk about it, but at the same time, I was just looking at that bench and thinking, again, I was thinking about Artur. You know, I was thinking about, you know, the just the other players who would also benefit from minutes. I mean, Artur hasn't seen a single minute yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I kind of wanted to see Ansu Fati come in just because of this situation. We were already up, you know, 4-5-1. It was a good situation. He's not going to lose anything. If anything, he scores, people are going to go crazy and so forth. But I think, Brian, Artur is your new Sergio Roberto, huh? You really want to see him get some minutes and get him playing time, huh?
There will never be another Sergio Roberto for me. But it's kind of, I mean, Sergio Roberto was also kind of like, well, he wasn't a new Chavi, because I didn't follow Chavi from when he was young. So it's a little different. But yeah, he's definitely the sort of the newer player who I am most interested in seeing more. I'll say that.
For sure.
But I'm not going to start coming up with, you know, man crush nicknames for him. Not yet, anyway. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
He's, well, something about his bowed legs, maybe. But speaking of Fati, though, he's just so graceful. I mean, he's like a gazelle out there. The way he moves and his passing is so effortless and beautiful. I mean, it's no wonder that he's, you know, he's getting looked at by Valverde already.
So you talked about Perez's performance as a winger, and now Fati. Again, this goes back to just learning the style from La Masia, you know, and it's attributable because you can see when they get plugged into a match like this, and I know we're playing this 4-3-3 system, and that's awesome for La Masia to learn this style, because you can see how easy it was for them to integrate, right? Fati came in, and he knew exactly the spacing, he knew where to hit the angles, and he almost had a goal on that one great shot, and it's because he's been trained for that. Now, again, at this highest level, Brian, you have to be adaptable for different tactics. And I know there's a slight change of 4-4-2, 4-3-3 and different things, but they're very slight, you know. Obviously, we're always going to prefer the 4-3-3. But for me, I posed the question on Twitter. I just said, you know, look how easy and integrated Perez and Fati looked because of La Masia. And again, that goes back to what we were talking about in the preseason, that we need to focus and bring more players to the system, because you can see the style of play. And the joy that, I mean, people on Twitter, Brian, were flipping out because they were just watching this joyful, you know, not Galactico players playing for us tonight.
Yeah, and I think that was really key. That was, I started watching this game with not a lot of joy, both for my own personal reasons, but also just because they weren't inspiring much. But as they got more into the game, they got the equalizer. So pretty much the entire second half, it just kept mounting. And Fati coming on was a part of that as well.
And I get the other thing, too, is thank God Valverde didn't make any changes, because the midfield figured it out. The front three eventually figured it out. Now, my only question is with Rafinha. I would have just maybe put someone else out there, just whatever. But again, he's not a forward. He's getting playing time. That's fine. You can't have everything perfect. But for me, the thing that Valverde didn't make changes, the midfield did figure it out, and you can see the barrage of goals that we finally got.
Yeah, and the third substitution that I want to touch on, because this is I know this is something that you wanted to talk about, is that Junior Firpo came on 81st minute for Rafinha, going up against his old club in Real Betis, and so that means there are effectively two people who are used to playing left back on the pitch. We have Junior Firpo and now Jordi Alba as well. And how did that affect things?
Yeah, it was weird, right? Because I thought for sure Junior Firpo was coming in and it'd be like, oh, Alba's going to get some break. Mm-hmm. No, he pushed forward.
Right.
And I was like, what? a person who hates to shoot the ball and doesn't really have any link up play with anyone on the field. Great. That's going to work out well for the next 15 minutes. You know, it's funny because I was thinking about this. I was like, who in the Barca's past could move up forward from defense? And I was like, Dani Alves. Dani Alves would have been a perfect moment for that, right? Because he would have looked for goals, and he's selfish that way, to look for goals in that way, in a good way. But again, I just sub Alba out, leave Rafinha in.
Right.
Just, I mean, what's the purpose?
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if Alba got hurt playing forward or something happened, right? Again, we need to preserve Alba. He's the number one. In this, you know, as we've seen last season, we need to preserve the players. The old style of football, Brian, where a player has to play the whole season and every match, every minute, is long gone.
Oh, yeah.
With so many competitions, so many minutes, you have to use the bench and preserve your players. As we saw tonight, Busquets, man, I mean, I hate to always go back to this, but man, it was so enlightening because the way he pressed tonight, the way he stole and dimed balls everywhere, it was just like, wow, this is like 2016 Busquets. And it kind of just realizes last season that he's on the decline. And I posted on Twitter, there's nothing wrong with that. He's been great for the club. He's masterclass. But the commentators on the Spanish TV were saying, if anyone doubts that he is on the decline, they didn't see this. He's on the decline. And that's fine. But we have to preserve him, Alba, Suarez, all these players. Because if we want to win Champions League this season, we need them at their top and at their best.
Yeah, and going back to the whole Firpo Alba thing, I mean, it is tricky when you put two wingbacks in on the same side. You know, they have to agree who's going to be on the wing and who's going to be back. And they mostly agreed, but there were times where they were both kind of playing in the same place and they were getting in each other's way. Again, it wound up being no big deal because we were already winning. There were only 9 minutes left in the game. We were going to win the game. It was clear. So then it's just fun to see, sure. To see how they bump into each other.
Exactly. I mean, thank God we had Fati on the other side because they kept trying to feed him balls, right? So that relieved the pressure on Alba trying to do anything. And again, the game was already in hand, so it's okay. But again, just sub Alba out and just leave Rafinha in because that would have kept, I guarantee if Rafinha was still in there in the match, it would have gave a little bit more balance and maybe a little bit more spacing for Fati. And who knows, he could have scored the goal. And that would have been really a cool moment at the Camp Nou Forum.
Yeah. Now, let me summarize the goals. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's how we're going to do it, Gabriel. Okay. Are you ready? We had ready. 7 goals in this match. I'm gonna go down the list chronologically. And any goal that you have a comment on it. If you don't. We don't have to get to all of them. But I'm going to just briefly run down the whole thing. So it all began in the 15th minute when Busquets made a pass that came up a little bit short and Canales stepped in front of Rafinha to grab it. And frankly, I was blaming Rafinha for giving that ball up, not Busquets. And then the counter was on and that put Fekir right in front of Ter Stegen to put it away.
I'll comment on this one. Again, we're still vulnerable on counterattacks big time, especially when we had so much possession already at the beginning of the match. They had one opportunity, one goal. Again, when we're playing better teams down the line and better competitions, we have to shore this up. Again, I think it's a little bit of both of Rafinha and Busquets not communicating well on this play. But as soon as this play happened, Busquets finally switched over, and he was definitely the man of the match for me.
Oh, Busquets was the man of the match for you?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Well, and then the equalizer didn't come until the 41st minute when Griezmann opened his account at Barcelona with a diving shot on a floated pass from Sergi Roberto, good old Sergi Blue Eyes, and that equalized things just before halftime.
I mean, this was important because this equalized right before halftime. You know, a lot of Barca fans on Twitter were walking the plank already, just kind of self-doubt, what are we doing, Valverde out, all this. But again, Sergi Roberto with an absolute dime, finding Griezmann and Griezmann getting his first goal in a Barca jersey.
Yeah, and it was, I would also like to point out, another great assist from Sergi Roberto. then after halftime, 5 minutes in, 50th minute, Griezmann with his second goal just after the start of the second half, another assist from Sergi Roberto.
Yeah, it was funny. On the interview after the match, they interviewed Griezmann and he said he watches Messi in practice do this all the time, so he wants to copy it. So that's why he did this shot. Again, I love shots from outside the box. You have a little bit better angle, and Griezmann was able to connect and get a second goal.
Now, I forget which one it was, whether it was the first one or the second one, but Griezmann had this bizarre new... it was the second goal. He had this bizarre new celebration where he had a person waiting with a container of glitter, and he runs down the end line, opposite side of the field, lets his assistant pour glitter into his hands so that he can throw it up in the air. And I'm glad he scored 2 goals. I'm glad we have him. but what? Like, what?
You're not a fan. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a fan.
It's funny on this. It's funny on the Spanish commentating I was listening to. They were saying that they saw him come to the stadium with his mate, right, his Uruguayan tea, and a bag with the glitter. And they actually saw him give the glitter to the guy beforehand. And they were questioning. They're like, what's in the bag, you know? And then when he did the celebration, they put two and two together. And then, of course, they didn't realize that it was a LeBron James kind of salute type of thing. And so they were trying to explain it. It was quite hilarious. But again, Brian, to me, the most important thing is that he scored the goals that we needed tonight. And he came through because we needed these points, you know? It didn't matter if it was one or three. So again, you're not a fan of it. I'm here or there with it. More for me is the masterclass of the second goal from him.
Yeah, you don't care about the post goal. You don't care about celebrations, I don't think.
No, not really.
You're not concerned with them. You just want the goals.
Correct.
Fair enough. 56th minute, Carlos Perez scores his first for the first team with an assist from Semedo.
My only comment on this is it was Messi-like the way he passed the ball into the left corner with his left foot. So, you know, again, just watching film and learning from the best, you get this type of goal.
Yeah. 60th minute, Jordi Alba scores one after a cutting pass from Busquets. Now, when you say Busquets for you is the man of the match, I can boil it down just to that one, that one pass. I mean, of course, like you said, for about 20 minutes, he was flawless. And there were a couple of other moments where he was maybe not flawless, but in this moment, it was absolutely flawless. I mean, that ball in for Alba was primo football.
It was primo football. And the other thing too, was people were on Twitter were saying, Alba looked to the middle for Messi, didn't see Messi, didn't want to shoot, and then just dribbled it in.
It was a goal by default. What do I do?
Exactly. Again,
I guess I'll just, okay.
Toe poke it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, how close was he until he finally let the ball off his foot? It's crazy. Like, at any professional level, it doesn't matter, your defender, midfielder, whatever, you know that if you are 3 meters away from goal, you should probably shoot the ball.
It seems like pretty fundamental, right?
It is fundamental, just like reading, you know?
Yeah, but he has so much training at trying to make the pass, you know, trying to put the cross in, putting the final ball in. He scores at most maybe 3-4 goals in a year. And honestly, this is starting early for Alba. He might actually get 5 goals this year, thanks to this one.
For sure. Do you know how lethal he would be if he actually used his right foot to shoot? Coming from that angle with his right foot, and if he actually took some more shots, he would definitely get into the 6 to 10 goal range because he always attacks that, and people are always looking for the Messi pass so he can take that shot, but he never wants to shoot with his right. My dad would be very disappointed for him not using his right foot.
Just because your dad is all... He wants everyone to be comfortable on both feet, right?
This is correct.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. But I mean, I think some folks were saying, I don't want to turn into a tabloid podcast. Some people are saying, let me rephrase this. The commentators I was watching here in the States, here on BN, I believe it was Ray Hudson, but it might have been Phil Shane, were mentioning that Carlos Perez is accused of only having a left foot. But kind of like you mentioned, that one goal that he did score, it was so Messi-esque that it might be okay that he only has that left foot. Of course, one of the many hundred things that makes Messi so great is that he's just great with whatever. Any part of his body that he touches the ball with is going to be great. But yeah, with Perez, it seems like he only has a left foot, and I guess Alba does as well. So I suppose your dad is especially disappointed.
He is, but the thing with Perez is he's coming from the right side, so having the left foot there is more opportunistic, whereas Alba being a left footer on the left side, he's going to have more closed angles. That's why, you know, imagine if he just came on that, especially that goal, maybe 1 meter before with a right foot shot, he would have had no problem scoring that if he gets better. Yeah. Again, it's just, you know, he's still a great player. I'm just saying it's just one other thing that could add to his tool belt.
Yeah, but I don't see at his age, I don't see him. I don't see him going in early to training and saying, I really need to work on shooting with my right foot. I really need to add that to my game.
Don't need to go early to training. You just need to shoot.
All right. So 77th minute, Arturo Vidal scores just minutes after coming on this time with an assist from Griezmann. So overall, Griezmann had 2 goals, 1 assist. Very good game for him. But Arturo Vidal put this one away.
I mean, his first 4 minutes was 1 shot, 1 goal, 3 fouls.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah, that's that tracks with what we know about Vidal at this point. And then just a couple minutes later, Betis get one back. 79th minute, Morón sent one past Ter Stegen on an intercepted pass from Griezmann to De Jong, and it was a screamer. So that was at least something for the traveling fans from Sevilla to appreciate. I mean, they knew they were getting beat, but that was one nice goal on Morón's part.
Definitely, it was an upper 90 screamer. You couldn't hit it any better. I mean, it's like on the rise, unsavable. So yeah, great take by him.
Yeah. Now next week, we're going up against Osasuna.
Oh, and Pamplona.
Yeah, going to Pamplona. That is Basque country.
Yes, it is. It's right there. And it's also, this is their first time back in La Liga, I think in like 5 years or so. So it's a tough place to play because they're the only big team in town. So they get a good support there. So yeah, it'll be a tough match. Luckily, we're playing now and not in the wintertime, because in the wintertime, it snows there.
Yeah, yeah. That's I didn't know that. I said yeah, like, oh, I've lived it.
You know, this is why you pay me the big bucks here, Brian, to give you the Spanish geography.
And weather reports.
And weather reports of soccer stadiums.
Yeah, you could have your own weather channel that's particular to just soccer stadiums.
That is correct. That's correct.
Well, I mean, as a general recap, I got to say, I'm calling this episode No Messi, No Suarez, No Dembele, No Problem. And it was true today. Maybe it wouldn't be true against another team on another week. But today, I really like what you mentioned about letting the midfielders figure it out, because they did. Everyone figured it out, and there was much more of a collective strength in this lineup and in this game than we've seen for a while. And this does go back to the side effects of depending on Messi so much, or even just having a player of Messi's caliber on the field and having Suarez on the field. You take those guys out, and it turns out that actually maybe we do have a really good squad otherwise that can do some really good things. Maybe Valverde is actually a pretty decent manager.
Pump the brakes.
Come on now. He's won 2 La Ligas in a row.
I know. But I think more, you know, how many games is his total now without playing Messi, counting preseason? Maybe 5 games now in total, something like this. Mm-hmm. So again, they're starting to come together as a team, and they're starting to focus now. That this game was so interesting because the first, you know, 35 minutes was really tough to watch. You know, we were watching the same thing with the possession. And again, they finally figured it out. Again, this is the confidence they need. I'm just curious to see what happens the next 2 games, because does Messi come back and all of a sudden they regress? Or does Messi hold back, and then we see what happens when the team can play together for another week without Messi? So it's going to be interesting. Obviously, we want Messi back because he's Messi. But, you know, it's going to be definitely interesting to see how, and especially away, you know, we always don't play as well when we're on the road.
Right. And the other question that comes up, because you've mentioned this before, about whether or not Valverde is able to get Messi to play in a slightly more disciplined way, to work him into a system, or, you know, does he just take a complete hands-off approach to Messi? Because it seems like he does, and that actually kind of hurts us in a couple of ways. It benefits us in a lot of ways, but it also causes the dependency problem. So that's the third option, right? Is whenever Messi does come back, what will happen, right? Will we regress? Will it work? And will Valverde manage to get him to become part of the system rather than having the system suddenly start trying to revolve around him again?
For sure. That's a good point. I mean, you saw tonight, you know, when the 4-3-3 is balanced up top, right? You have the two wingers and the person in front. It's always going to spread the defense thin when you have three forwards playing in unison, right? But, you know, I would love, you know, if Messi came back and played on the right side as a right winger in the 4-3-3, because I think with him and Griezmann, then all of a sudden that just opens up that far left side to whoever else is playing. You would maximize that space, and they would have so many opportunities. But again, Messi's going to play central, and that's going to leave a void again in that 4-3-3 that we play with him. So again, there's no answer to it, because Valverde is not a strict manager like with Luis Enrique, or even, you know, obviously Guardiola leaving Messi and not allowing him to play make as much. So again, it's really going to come down to if he starts against Osasuna and how we play. Because again, if we have this starting lineup and we substitute Rafinha with Messi, for example, how does De Jong play with Messi? How does Sergio Roberto in the midfield play with Messi again? They have to figure that all out. So again, this could be a thing of, you know, we won the match tonight, but the next match is going to be preseason again, and we may lose that match because we're trying to feel our way again playing with Messi.
Right. Well, I'm not super worried about, I mean, I know that you've mentioned that we're going to be on the road, we'll be in Pamplona, but I'm not super worried that if there are some growing pains of getting Messi back into it, of losing to Osasuna. Not really.
Mm-hmm. Are you sure, Brian?
Well, I mean, I'm sure. Here's the thing. Obviously, you're not.
I mean, the thing is, it's early in the season. Osasuna had a better preseason than we did. You know, they had a real preseason. So again, I always just look back at these first couple games because it reminds me of the Valladolid match last season, where Valladolid was just newly promoted. The whole city is behind the team. Barcelona comes into town. The whole town is going to be behind it. They're going to have a whole week leading up to this match in Osasuna or in Pamplona. So again, I think it's going to be more difficult than you think it's going to be in that it's just that whole fanfare and stuff. And more importantly, if Messi starts, then I think the other half of the team could be psychologically saying, oh, Messi's back, we don't have to do as much as we did against Betis, for example.
Yeah. You know, and as you're saying this, I'm reminded that of something that the great Andres Iniesta once said, you don't play football on paper.
This is correct.
So,
this is correct.
Yeah. Any given Sunday,
football,
right?
Is hard. Yeah. And football is hard, and eat your vegetables, right?
Yeah. And I eat like a pro. Very quotable man. All right. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about what happened in Pamplona. Barca Talk is a production of Sound It Media, written by Brian Henderson and Gabriel Quiroga, editing and post-production by Brian Henderson, music by Brian Henderson, social media and promotion by 2.go. Support the show on Patreon for double the weekly episodes and more bonus content. Until next time, Visca Barca.